Only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Friday, July 6th. Hardly seems possible that it's Friday already. Everybody's a little bit discombobulated by the 4th of July holiday falling right in the middle of the week. Nobody's complaining, though, that we have another weekend coming up here, the first full weekend in July. And as you just heard Tracy say a few minutes ago, it looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend with nothing but sunshine, dry conditions, no rain. And not too hot. Nice. We have guests who will be joining us a little bit later on the program today. We're going to kick it off with open talk, though. Phone number is 283-2525. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Bruce Mazzoni, who will fill us in on the Cranberry Township Community Chest Project and also Cranberry Community Days, which next week, I believe. Yeah, I think. Bruce will have details on that. And also later on today, Simon Newbert joins us with information about the big Model T international tour that's coming to Butler. And that's, I believe, later this month, too. Yeah, the middle of the month. And there's going to be a whole bunch of Model Ts here in Butler. And I'm not just exactly sure what day it is or what they're going to be doing. But Simon will have the details for us a little bit later on the program today. It'll be interesting to see a lot of Model Ts around town. So all of that to come a little bit later. But first, it's open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. Encyclopedia Britannica. Celebrating its 250th anniversary this year. I saw a piece on the wire about it. 250 years. Wow. But, you know, it's pretty much gone now. There's an online presence, but the print edition of Encyclopedia Britannica ended in 2010. That's the last time they printed encyclopedias. So it's 8 years ago now. Did you have encyclopedias when you were a kid? I'm a baby boomer, and we did. We had the World Book Encyclopedia. Door-to-door salesman came to the door, and Mom and Dad decided to purchase it for us kids. And I used it a lot, quite frankly. World Book Encyclopedia. I can still see them lined up on the bookshelf there in the den. Mm-hmm. Who knew that encyclopedias, at least printed edition, would be gonzo within a few decades? Encyclopedia Britannica I never used too much. It was pretty high end, you know. Really, really fine print. Kind of hard to understand certainly for school kids. The World Book wasn't exactly dumbed down, but it wasn't quite as complex, as hard to get as Encyclopedia Britannica was. I've seen Encyclopedia Britannica, but, and by the way, if you have old ones, whether it's World Book or Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever, don't try to give them away to used book sales or anything. They're useless these days. Now, Encyclopedia Britannica still has an online site. I've jumped on there a couple of times, but not very often. Wow. Encyclopedias. Gone. Who knew? And, you know, I've talked to some teachers. And with the advent of the internet and instantaneous access to so much information, they're changing the way they teach a lot of courses now, including history, for example, where they really don't require kids to learn a lot of dates, memorize a lot of dates anymore. because, you know, if you want to know when the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, you can find it in a heartbeat. You know, just pick up your phone and a couple of taps, and there you are, 1620. But there are those of us who remember those dates. And you know, we probably will all of our lives, right? Columbus's first voyage, 1492. Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Pilgrims arriving at Massachusetts Bay Colony, 1620. Jamestown settled, 1607. And then the hardest one of all to remember, when was the War of 1812 fought? Actually, it was 1812 and a couple of years later, but that's when it started. I guess kids don't have to worry about that too much anymore. And the same thing with some math. I mean, I don't know whether they're still teaching basic addition and subtraction, but, you know, calculators are everywhere. You can also get that on your smartphone. Yeah. Open Talk at 283-2525 is the number. 283-2525 is the number. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day about, of all things, popsicles. Remember popsicles? Do they still make popsicles? I have no idea. I have no idea. I haven't seen any in years. But that was a staple of summertime, July, back when I was a kid. Popsicles, they came in a double thing. You had to kind of break them apart. You know, it came two in a wrapper. And they came in all different flavors. I loved the banana popsicles. And I liked blueberry. Couldn't find blueberry a lot, but they had those too. Nice on a hot summer day, a hot July day, have a popsicle. Okay, let's go to the phones. It's Open Talk, 283-2525 is the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. Hi. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
Hey, they still make popsicles. I was just at the picnic on the 4th, and I had one.
Hmm.
So,
you were at the
all
picnic?
Different colored flavors.
You were at, what picnic were you at, did you say?
Just at a friend's.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, no, what I really called you about was, the other day you had somebody on about the Science Center,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about their Lego display.
Yes, uh-huh.
Have you ever been to Legoland in Florida?
No, I didn't even know there was such a place. No.
Oh, it's wonderful. You can't imagine what all they have. They have, like, little cities like D.C. and different cities done with Legos. And they have at the time I was there, which was several years ago, they had a full-size Ford Explorer, all done with Legos. I mean, whoever's imagination that did all this stuff, and I can't imagine how long it took them to do it, but it is just beautiful. I think the older people would enjoy it a lot more than the kids would, because just to see how much creativity went into putting all this stuff together.
But well, I'd never heard of Legos until one of my nephews got hooked on them, you know, when he was, 9, 10, 11 years old, something like that. And he was really, really into them, and they made all kinds of stuff, but I'd never heard of them before that.
No. When I
was a kid,
my grandkids come, and I still have some. I've picked them up over the years. I've picked up extra ones and stuff, and they just make all kinds of stuff out of them. They just love to create stuff with them, and it's really good activity for them.
What did you have when you were a kid? Did you play with anything like that?
No, no. We lived on a farm. We didn't have much. So we didn't have, you know, anything like that. That was way beyond our means.
I had a couple of things.
I remember the Erector sets. My kids had Erector sets when they were little.
I had an Erector set.
You know, the oldest one is 52 right now, and they just, you know. But the Legos, I remember, I kept my neighbor's kids before they went to school. They got on the bus at my house, And they played with Legos every day before they went to school. They just, but they're, that display in Pittsburgh would probably be something to see.
But the Legoland
in Florida, if you ever have a chance to go there, it might be a little bit pricey to go, but I think you would find it well worth the money to see what all they have on display there.
Where is it in Florida, by the way? You know what city it's in?
It's southwest of Orlando.
Okay.
I can't think of the name of the town right offhand. It's not too far from Winter Haven, down in that area.
Legoland, huh?
Legoland, yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks for the tip.
Okay, thanks. I really enjoy your show. I really do.
Thank you for that.
Oh, you got my message that I left a couple weeks ago about the reporter's mom.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Sure.
Thanks a lot, then.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Have a good weekend too. I don't know. I had an Erector set for a while when I was a kid. I guess I had fun with it. I don't have great memories of it. I had some Lincoln Logs at one point. Didn't have a monstrous set of them, but I had enough to, you know, build a cabin or whatever you build with Lincoln Logs. And that was it. But I don't think anything was... something else. I never had a Tinker Toy. Was it Tinker Toys? I never had any of those, but I remember them vaguely. 283-2525 is the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Yeah, we had Tinker Toys. We had plastic bricks to build little houses. We had Lincoln Logs.
They had, you could build a cabin, and then they had these, the more I think about it, the more I remember. They had these green boards that you could put a roof on. You know, if you build a cabin, you could put a roof on with these green boards.
Yep.
I didn't have plastic blocks. So that must have been a precursor to Lego then, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my, yeah.
Yeah.
And Lego is made similarly to what the little plastic bricks were, you know, with the little dimples in them and how they lock together.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not all that familiar with the more modern Legos, my Legos goes back to about about 20 years. So, you know, the more modern Legos are a lot different, I think.
Well, they sure have been popular, and
they're great for kids.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a good pastime.
You know, it's so it builds their imagination, and that's what kids need, is to, you know, work on that. But that's not what I called either.
Yeah.
The reason that I called, did you ever engage in a Nielsen rating? You know, did they call you from Nielsen?
I have never been called. I did get a thing in the mail one time about it, where you were, you know, you were to keep a diary of what you watched on TV.
Oh, okay.
For a week, I think it was.
Okay.
I was not eligible because I work in the media, so.
Sure.
I was disqualified.
Yesterday in the mail, I got a letter from Nielsen, and it said that they were going to call me and do a phone interview and ask me for ratings, and that if I did that, they would send me a small token, and they sent me a dollar with the doggone letter, too, so, you know. But and then it said, you know, they were not going to try to sell me anything. However, they did not indicate that they wouldn't sell my information to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined not to be part of their scheme, whatever it is. And I'm thinking that it is a scheme. I think it's I can't imagine that Nielsen would actually, you know, send a letter with a dollar and say, "How about taking?"
It does seem a little fishy, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I just wondered if there was anybody else out there that might have any information about how Nielsen goes about their ratings.
Well, we'll put the word out. When I got the package in it, was, I don't know, it was years and years ago, there was no dollar in it, that's for sure.
Right.
Well, we'll see if anybody else has received that stuff.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure. So long. Have a good weekend.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 283-2525, Open Talk, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Just fine. Even better than I'm talking to you.
Well, thank you so much. I just want to tell a cute little story about building things.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my 3-year-old granddaughter a set of just plain wooden building blocks. I'm sure you've seen them.
Yeah.
That's all they are. You build what you want. Well, she opened them. It was a Christmas. She opened them, and she looked up, and she said, "Where's the directions?"
There are no directions.
I thought that was a cute thing.
Oh, my. Well, kids will play with anything, you know, if you want them to use their imagination. Heck, they'll play with cardboard boxes sometimes.
Oh, yes. And all of them used those building blocks and used their imagination, but she thought there should be directions.
Where's the direction? One of my sisters had when they were a baby, they had a set of those wooden blocks, and they had the letters of the alphabet on them.
Yes, I've seen those also. Mm-hmm.
So you could, you could build a pyramid, or then I guess when you got a little bit older, you could start learning the letters of the alphabet.
Right. Well, nice talking to you, Dave.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bye. 283-2525 is the number. Open Talk. I could go for a popsicle right now. Sounds pretty good. Hey, I'll have to look. Bye, George. Next time I'm in the convenience store or, supermarket. We never bought popsicles at a supermarket. We get them at the corner store, you know. Just kind of a one-shot snack. Buy one, break it in two, and give the other one to your best friend, you know. But I suppose you would find them in supermarkets. I don't know. I'll look at my neighborhood convenience store and see, especially if they have banana. I'll take a banana popsicle. Pretty good. Nice cooling and refreshing, huh? Unlike Kool-Aid, which was another thing that they used to have when I was a kid. Not my favorite drink, but for a lot of folks it was. I always liked lemonade, and still do. And some of the instant lemonades these days are pretty good. I'm trying to think of the brand. If I saw the can, I could tell you. It's yellow letters. It's not Crystal Light. It's something else. But that's good. And it tastes like the real thing, you know. Unlike Tang, which tasted nothing like orange juice. Yeah, that was pretty bad. I think our family bought one jar of that stuff, and that was enough. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Used to like root beer floats when I was a kid. With Dad's root beer. That was the best, and I know there's a zillion different kinds of root beer. Well, it's not a zillion, but there are many different kinds of root beer today. Was it last summer? Last summer, I think. I was in the grocery store, and there, lo and behold, was Dad's root beer. It was like a liter bottle, I guess. And I snarfed up a couple. And, by gosh, tasted just like it did back when I was a kid. I even made myself a homemade root beer float. With the Dad. And, there's other good, you have A&W and, all the other stuff. Barks, root beer. But nothing to me matches the flavor of Dad's. Dad's root beer. I have no idea where it's made or how they ever got the name of Dad's, but it's a good memory from childhood. Childhood and teen years as well. 283-2525 is our number. Open Talk here on the program today. That and paper straws. And, you know, we talked about this a week or so ago. And this movement to eliminate plastic straws is really spreading across the country and around the world. City of Seattle has enacted legislation to outlaw plastic straws. The problem is they're polluting the water and the oceans because we use millions of them every day around the world. Millions. And, you know, supposedly when they first came out, they were going to be the greatest thing because you could reuse them, you know, instead of throwing them away. Well, who reuses a straw? Yeah, nobody. And nobody wants to use somebody else's straw either. And so they just get thrown away. And they do not biodegrade. And when you think of, hundreds of millions every year, it's a lot. So there's a movement to return to paper straws. I would do it, quite frankly, in a minute. I don't know whether you can buy paper straws these days. But I don't use them that often, occasionally. But, you know, every time you go into a restaurant, you know, the server brings out water with a straw. Or if you order a soft drink, you get a straw. Most servers actually carry them in their, you know, their apron, their bib. They got 15 or 20 of them there. They just hand you one. And you think of that being repeated over and over again all over the world. Yeah. The European Union. The Union of 20-some European countries has proposed a ban on plastic straws and on plastic cutlery. Well, that's something I didn't think about, but same thing. You know, what do people do with the plastic cutlery after the picnic? Well, I suppose some people save it and wash it, but most people, it just goes into the trash, right, along with the paper plate. And that doesn't biodegrade either. Yeah. We've become more sensitive to these issues. A lot of us have, at least, since the recycling movement started. I, quite frankly, was astonished whenever we first got recycling bins, to realize how much plastic I was throwing away, you know, into the trash every week. But when you start putting it into the recycling bin, you say, wow. And it's part of life right now. You know, I don't even think about it. Anything that's plastic bottles, juice, soda pop, water, whatever, recycle them, yeah. 283-2525, our number, open talk. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
Do you ever get solicitation calls?
You mean unsolicited calls to buy something or something like that?
Yes, services and that.
Not too much. I signed up several years ago on the Do Not Call list, and that really cut mine down tremendously.
But 2 years back, got a solicitation call. In fact, I got about five in about 3 months from the same company. And they said, by talking with your neighbors, we understand you have water in your basement.
Huh.
So after about the fifth call, I said, you know, I said, if you want to come up and take a look at that, I said, we do have water in the basement. So I made it early in the morning, and they come from east of Pittsburgh. And I made it early enough where they, you know, made an effort to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So when they got to the house, we sat down and talked a little bit, and he said, let me take a look at your basement. Well, we had a finished basement with some carpet in it and a nice wood burner. So I opened the door, and we went down, and he said, where's your water? I said, my hot tub. He said, well, I don't appreciate this very much. And I said, let me tell you, I don't appreciate your phone calls. I said, and they would always call when you were eating your evening meal. So,
What would disturb me about that is when they, because I'm very suspicious at his first line. Well, in talking to your neighbors, I understand you have water in your basement. What do you mean, talking to my neighbors? You know.
That's what I ask them.
Yeah, how would they know to begin with? And, you know.
I said, our neighbors have ever been in our house. Yeah. Oh. Well, needless to say, that was the last phone call I got from those people.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a come on, that's for sure. The only ones that I still get, you know, are from politicians, of course, because when they implemented the no-call law, they exempted themselves. So.
Well, I've signed up for that about 2 years ago, and we still get them.
Really?
We understand you're having trouble with your Internet.
Oh, my.
Well, I said to the guy that called in, and they're always, you know, from, you know, Middle East, and you have a hard time understanding them. And I said, well, I said, that's funny because we do not have Internet. So we get about 3 or 4 calls like that a month.
There
and
are.
We're on the 800, you know, do not call.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only other than politicians, which were exempted, also nonprofit charities, I believe, were exempted as well. So I will occasionally get a call from that. But, you know, I just politely say, well, you know, I make my donations privately and, you know, whether it's a good cause or not, I say I don't do it to phone solicitations.
Another call we get for solicitation. I had one last week for the state police, and state police do not solicit for their pension fund.
Well, that's the other thing. You hear those, whether it's for, you know, firefighters or police or this or that and the other thing, and I say, well, I take care of those donations myself, you know.
Yeah. And but I just was wondering if any other people have gotten these solicitation calls.
Well, we'll put her out there.
Okay, because we usually get a couple a week, and we're on the do not call list.
Hmm. Do you have caller ID that you can tell who's calling you before you pick up the phone?
Yes, we do, and sometimes it's a 724 number.
Hmm. And that's very strange. Well, we'll see. Maybe someone else has experienced that as well.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Have a good weekend, my friend.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
283-2525. It's Open Talk. Let's go to this line next. Hi there. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
One Saturday, about 3 weeks ago, I got 18 telephone calls.
Oh, my.
Unsolicited. Hello?
Was it all from the same person or
no,
company?
No, different numbers. Different numbers.
My goodness.
And I wrote each number down. And I had it. So I went to the cable company, Armstrong, that I have, and asked if there was something I could do for with my phone. And they said yes, but for $2.50 a month, they did it right there at the office, and I haven't had a call since from unsolicited people.
So you have the you have the Armstrong phone service, too, in addition to TV, huh?
Yes, yes. But there is something that they can, I think you can get on your phone if you don't have them, but I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like heaven, you know, my phone doesn't ring now at dinner time or on Sundays. It was absolutely horrendous.
Mm.
So for $2.50, I don't mind at all.
It's worth it.
And they have to push when somebody calls, then they have to push a number if they're not a solicitor.
Hmm.
That's the only way they get through to me.
I had not heard of that system, but I don't have a landline anymore. In fact, I haven't for, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 years. I just have a mobile phone. That's all I use.
Yeah. Well, I'm on a mobile phone, but I barely use that. But anyway, I just thought I'd call and let that fellow know there is a way if he has Armstrong.
Well, I appreciate that.
It might be with other cable companies, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Could be.
Okay. And I miss you in the morning.
You miss me in the morning. I'm still there.
Yeah.
I'm still there in the morning.
But I mean, you know, It's just not the same. I don't like all the country stuff. But anyway, that's up to them, I guess.
You must be on the wrong station.
Oh, I don't know. No. I only listen to ISRBUT.
Our sister station plays the country music. We play oldies and doo-wop and 70s and that kind of stuff.
Is that where Tyler is?
He's back and forth.
Oh, okay.
He's a swing
right.
man.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for the call. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. We take a break. Our first guest will be joining us. We're scheduled to chat with Bruce Mazzoni from Cranberry Township, and we'll say hi to Bruce here in just a minute or so. We'll be back with more of the Friday edition of It's Your Turn after these words.
Dr. Andrew Szabo of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Joe's never the kind to be still for long. A hernia can stop that in a hurry. The technology we use makes surgery less invasive, and that makes recovery less challenging. That's a big investment for a community hospital. But then again, we're not the average community hospital.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Welcome back, good friends, and we say hello to an acquaintance that we haven't seen in a while. That's Bruce Mazzoni from Cranberry Township. Bruce, good to see you. Nice to have you back with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bruce is a board member of the Cranberry Township Community Chest. We want to talk a little bit about their good work, and also about Cranberry Community Days, which is an annual multi-day event down in Cranberry. And that's next week, isn't it?
Next week it starts.
Yeah. Tell us about it. First of all, the dates. First date is the 12th, I guess.
The 12th is when the event in the festival grounds start itself. It really starts the 11th in the evening. We have our Martinis with Monet, which is the opening of our art exhibit for our Cranberry Artists Network. We will have probably 350 people attend that evening.
That's Wednesday of next
Wednesday,
week.
Wednesday, correct. That's the opening of our arts area. We'll have like 90 different works of art, and it's just a kickoff to Community Days.
Where does that take place,
Bruce? At the municipal building.
I see. And are there any tickets left for that?
There are, and really you want to get them beforehand. We're not going to be selling them at the door just because we end up getting too many people. And, it's a catered event. It's a catered event, so it's an event that, we want to limit it and have it to just a few of the people who are selected so they can have a good time.
Well, if it's too overcrowded, you can't move around, you can't look at
correct.
The
exactly,
the
exactly. Mm-hmm.
But then the 12th, which is next Thursday, that's the kickoff of the actual Community Days activities, and it runs through Saturday.
We ended, of course, with our fireworks It'll be one of our biggest fireworks. But new this year for us is the Chainsaw Expo and Village. We will have 12 chainsaw, international chainsaw artists with us. Basically a spinoff of, you used to have a one in Butler County at the farm show. Ken Tynan is the gentleman who's coordinating it with us. Ken has been down to the last five community days. He's done a lot of work for us in Cranberry. You see a lot of his stuff all around. And he's inviting 12 of his friends from across the country to join us, and we will be spending 3 days carving and selling in an auction. We have two auctions scheduled.
Now, this all takes place at the same park, right?
Correct. It all takes place at our community park, which is right off at 19 by the fire station on 19.
I know Ken. He's an extremely accomplished chainsaw artist. In fact, he's done this all over the world, really.
He has.
And he's got pieces in a lot of places. He's got some pieces of his sculpture at Stoughton Acres Golf Course. Just outside of Butler, including one of the late Arnold Palmer, which is, I mean, to get a likeness of Arnold Palmer out of a tree is just fantastic, especially when you're working with a chainsaw, for goodness sakes.
No, you're right. I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff. Well, you know, he's done our Indian Village, which is in Graham Park, and it consists of seven pieces, because that used to be an area where Indians were once there as they moved up and down the river. But also, he's done a beautiful Roberto Clemente statue. I'm trying to find it for you right there. Figure Roberto Clemente. A lot of different things. Anyhow, at this event, we expect over 100 different sculptures to be made. They'll be sold at the village. So even the stuff that was meant for the auction, it could be bought ahead of time. And then, as I said, we'll have two auctions, one on Friday, one on Saturday, where everything goes.
And you can watch these individuals at work, which is phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. And also not too noisy, because during community day hours, they'll all be using electric saws.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
That'll still have the wood chips flying, though.
You're right. No doubt about it.
Talking about community days down in Cranberry. Next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Is there an admission charge to get into Community Day?
No, it's free. It's free for everyone, which makes it a pretty popular event. We expect 35,000. The weather looks great, so I expect easily that amount. You know, this year we also increased our amount of booth space available for vendors. We increased it by 50%. And if we didn't, we would have sold out of spaces early May. We expect 175 vendors there.
Wow.
Of course, we have a full carnival and a wide variety of events, concerts, a variety of different things, something for everyone. We have a 6-hole frisbee course that's free to play, a variety of different activities to keep everyone occupied.
What about the carnival rides? You buy tickets for that, surely?
You do. You can either buy an all-day pass for a fixed price. We're selling them in our municipal building for just $15. On the day of, there's $20, except Saturday, we don't have an all-day pass, just because it starts at 1 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock, as we would do on Thursday and Friday.
Music?
We have four concerts lined up, so a lot of music going on. As I said, we have all the different vendor booths that will keep everyone occupied. And then a variety of different nonprofit events, a 5K going on. We have our fire company doing the Battle of the Barrels. They're doing how they cut open a car to save someone. They'll do a demonstration on that.
Oh, Jaws of Life.
Jaws of Life, all in activity. A lot of people enjoy seeing that. We have Art in the Park going on. You know, we have right now probably 60 trees decorated in yarn. yarn balming trees that are up right now.
Wait a minute. This is something I've not heard of
before. Oh, this is our fifth year that we're doing it.
Yarn balming?
Yes. The trees are all covered with yarn. Literally, these ladies spent all day in order to generate. They knit for the tree itself and stitch it up on there. They have high lifts to get up there to do the upper branches on it. Actually, we leave that up all summer long. We take it down at the end of our concert series, which is around September.
Oh, I see a picture of it here in your program. That is very colorful. I've never even heard of that before.
If you haven't heard of it, you have to come down and take a look at it. Also, they have about 30 their 10-inch pipes that they knit around, anywhere from a missile to a lollipop to they decorate it all different ways on there. It's something to see, very nice to look at.
That'll be on display for all 3 days. The Cranberry Township Historical Society will have a couple of booths there with a little bit of local history.
Correct. As they always do, they'll have their booth. The library will have their booth. This year, we always introduce our next project of the year, and this year we're going to be introducing our newest project for the library.
Mm-hmm.
It consists of four specific parts of it. This is our ninth project of the year. It's the makerspace. We will be doing a makerspace for the library. And the makerspace, the idea of the makerspace is the library is more than just learning from books. It's learning by hands-on activities. And therefore, we're going to do the makerspace. The other thing we're doing, too, is the radio frequency tags on books. You know how now they have the barcodes?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You take the barcode up, they scan it, scan your card, off you go. Well, with the radio frequency tag, and if you have radio frequency tag on your library card, literally you grab the DVD or the book or whatever and literally walk out the door. It senses your library card. It senses the radio frequency of the book. And that's it. You checked out that piece of material automatically.
Amazing.
It's amazing. The technology, huh? It's incredible.
Was this... the future of libraries is going to replace the scanning, barcode.
I think so. I know winter in Florida, and the library there is all radio frequency. So, it's something that exists, something that's being done, and we're looking to head in that area. The other part of it is making it more ADA accessible, putting sliding glass doors in rather than the old manual open up the doors. I know a lot of people in wheelchairs and walkers have a hard time with that, so we're trying to make it more accessible on that. As I said, that's our ninth project of the year. Currently working on our that's the bad word to use with the disc golf professionals. And they caught me on radio saying that. But we're finishing up our course. We have a championship disc golf course in our North Boundary Park being built. We still have a couple more months on it, along with a six-hole ADA course. And then a two-mile nature trail is part of that. This will be the top 10 disc golf course in the world, in distance and in difficulties. It's a full 18-hole, par 72 hole. So I know a lot of people are very excited about that in the disc golf world. So we are too. We're very excited to have that into our park.
What's the? I've never done it. You try to throw a disc into a basket or something?
Exactly. And believe it or not, they have different types of discs depending on what you're. The distance you're looking to play, like a golf course,
like a seven iron or a two iron.
Exactly,
or whatever.
They literally this one that goes straight. They call a putter. Hmm. So if the professional, they go with a bag of discs on their back and off they go accordingly.
I would like to see that in action sometime. Well, I've heard of it.
Come on down. We'll play. Let's play a round together.
Okay.
And the price is right too. Free.
Free.
Yeah, it's available to the public. All the time for free.
Take your own disc. What park is that in?
North Boundary Park. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very fortunate. And the one before that was our sports complex.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's on the cover of our, that consisted of 8 pickleball courts, 2 tennis courts, 3 bocce courts, 2 basketball courts, and 4 horseshoe courts, professional horseshoe courts.
It's an amazing complex. I tell you, the Cranberry Township Community Chest, your projects are almost unbelievable, and you've been able to accomplish so much with these big projects.
We're very fortunate. You know, just from Community Days itself, you know, when I took over this, it's now my 12th year of chairing Community Days. We took it from the township. It had revenues of about $7,000 and probably expenses of about $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
It was a community day. And when CTCC took it over as their day, we expanded it to 3 days. We'll do revenues probably about $270,000 this year.
Mm.
So, and from that, CTCC proceeds, we'll probably be able to kick to the next project $150,000 just to start off right from the bat. So Community Days, you know, its theme is a celebration of our nonprofit and civic group. And this year, you know, all the different nonprofit and civic groups will probably bring in $225,000 along with all the volunteers helping to push their causes accordingly, making them aware of those causes. So it's been a very successful program for us.
These sports courts in Grand Park are just gorgeous. Wow.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. And that was, again, we built that one based on the sports itself. The people who wanted to see certain sports, they could contribute money directly to it. As an example, in tennis, we expected 4 courts, but we only raised enough money for 2, and we built 2. Shuffleboard, we raised like a few $100s. We killed it completely. But the pickleball courts, we have 8 pickleball courts there, and that is a growing sport in itself. We have formed the Cranberry Township Pickleball Association. In August, we started membership. Now we have 370 members.
Well, that, like disc golf, is another sport that I have not tried, although I have an old fraternity brother who said they play it all the time down in Florida, and he's become a devotee.
Yeah, they call it the fastest-growing sport, and it is. It's a very popular sport. It's one that I play, too, and I enjoy it a lot. Great exercise. I'm not a jogger, but you play pickleball. You know, I keep a pedometer with me. It's, you know, in like a 90-minute play, you don't even realize you've gone that long, and you're walking 8,000-10,000 steps.
Kind of like tennis, isn't it?
It's like tennis. It's not as you don't have to run as far back and forth. It's more contained in itself. A different technique than tennis, but very similar.
So this year's project is to get started on these major upgrades at the Cranberry Township Community Library, which, by the way, is a fantastic facility already. I visited for the first time a couple of years ago, and I was just blown away. It's modern, clean, spacious, magnificent, you know.
Yeah, we're very blessed. There's no doubt about it, and now we'll bring it to a whole new level. We're very excited for it, and I think it's a nice project. I mean, let's be honest, disc golf appeals to certain people. The library, that appeals to everyone from 2 years old to 92 years old. Mm-hmm. Everyone uses the library. So I expect it to be a very successful project. This is a $750,000 project. It's amazing that we're able to generate that kind of money for these type of projects.
I'm sure they'll be very happy at the library. The Cranberry Public Library, by the way, is in the municipal building.
It is.
Cranberry Township Municipal Building, which, and this goes back, I'm sure, before your days. Bruce is also a member of the Cranberry Township Board of Supervisors. But the whoever was on the board way back when they purchased, it was an old forge, wasn't it? That building,
exactly.
Where the municipal building is
it
now?
It is. It was an old forge, and you know, coincidentally, that's why we titled our next project, Forge Ahead. for that reason. Forging ahead, and of course, it roots was a forge. Perry Forge used to be there.
And a little bit at a time, I recall you renovated a part of it, and then eventually the whole thing. And it's a magnificent structure, magnificent building.
It is very nice. Unlike Butler, we don't have it downtown. And so the idea was, when that originally was conceived, that would be our town locale, town central. And, you know, it is laid out that way if you looked at it on that standpoint. But it is. It's a very nice facility. A lot of people think it was built from scratch, and they're shocked to see that, you know, and it, you know, it's the major structure of that forge is still there.
Hmm. We're talking with Bruce Mazzoni. He chairs Cranberry Township Community Chest Community Days and has for several years. And as I mentioned just a moment or so ago, he's also a member of the Cranberry Township Board of Supervisors and have been for some years now.
It's my 13th year.
Yeah, so you're in your third term?
Third term. I just started my third term.
Hmm. We're talking about community days. You don't have to be a Cranberry Township resident to go, do you?
Of course not. No, I mean, we welcome it to everyone. We try to reach out to everyone to let them know about it. You know, we bring obviously people in from the three different counties, or the majority of our people who come. And again, the cost for a family of four is the perfect number, free.
Yeah.
And I know that in itself attracts a lot of people. Plus, you know, again, with 175 vendors, we are the second largest show of vendor in Western PA, second to the Pittsburgh Home Show.
Mm.
So a lot of people do come just for the vendors. So a wide variety of them, a lot of handouts, free samples, obviously a lot of food vendors too. Again, people enjoy going to the different vendors.
Where, for people who have never been there, where is Cranberry Community Park?
It's off of 19. A lot of people know where the fire station is, the blinking lights on 19 in Cranberry. And literally, you would make a turn onto Ernie Mashuda Road right next to the fire station.
And is there parking right there?
There is parking. You go up Ernie Mashuda Road, we would have parking there. And some people park on the back of that park off of Unionville Road. There's a Cranberry Business Park, hard surface park, with many, many, many spots there, and we use that too. They allow us to use that during community days.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a nice, relaxing time if you visit. You know, you can stroll around and enjoy. You can ride the rides if you want to, but you don't have to. Just enjoy yourself. Huh?
Exactly. And again, I mean, even we even have passenger shuttles picking up people too. They don't even have to walk far from a parking standpoint. It's a nice time. As I said, it's an event that obviously is great for young kids. We feel with the chainsaw event going on, that'll be very attractive to a lot of other people. We have a 10% coupon going out in a variety of different advertisement for the village itself. And again, all the different vendors that have crafts or things that they're selling. It's a nice time. And as I stated earlier, the weather looks to be very delightful this whole week coming.
Golf ball drop is one of the events on the agenda, I see.
It's for the Rotary. The Rotary does their annual golf ball drop. They literally will go up on the 100-foot ladder truck of the fire company. They have a golf hole underneath, drop off all the golf balls, and it's like $1,000 to the ball that's closest. I think even 2,000, 1,000 then to the second closest, and 500 to the golf ball furthest away.
Another thing I've never heard of, dropping golf balls from the top of an aerial truck.
Yeah, that's it. This is their fourth year of doing it. first year at Community Days. We're glad they brought it in because, as I said, it is a celebration of our nonprofit and civic groups, and we try hard to promote those nonprofit and civic groups accordingly.
Well, if you've been to Community Days before, it's even bigger this year, 50% additional booth space, so you want to leave yourself a lot of time to browse through that area.
As I said, well over 175 different vendors, so, I mean, it takes a lot of time to see everyone.
Cranberry Township, for many folks, it's kind of like the model municipality for Western Pennsylvania. The various boards of supervisors over the decades have done wonderful things down there. One still relatively new thing is Cranberry Highlands Golf Course. When I first heard that they were going to build a golf course on an area that had it was kind of a sludge dump, wasn't it, at
exactly,
one point?
Exactly, for our sewage plant.
Yeah.
When it was legal to do it, it's not legal to do it now.
But that, I've played it several times. It's magnificent. I mean, that's as good as any country club course, and it's a municipal golf course, for goodness sakes.
No, it is. I mean, we'll get basically revenues dictated by weather. You have a sunny day like today, I guarantee you there'll be 200 rounds played on that golf course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had two of those, we would sell out both of them, I'm sure.
Now, is that owned by Cranberry Township?
It is. We are almost done with our bond payment of that. It was paid, originally built with a revenue bond,
mm-hmm.
And it's paid off by the golfers, in which 80% of the golfers actually are non-Cranberry residents. So it's something that is being paid by the golfers itself. I think in another 6-7 years, that bond will be paid off, and the money will be coming to the coffers of the government, helping to reduce taxes for our residents.
Another way that Cranberry, I think, at least in my opinion, is a model municipality, even though you've had tremendous growth over the decades, especially the past three decades, you have maintained green space. There are, I think, three big parks, aren't there, in Cranberry Township?
There are. There's three big parks, and, of course, the municipal golf course itself mm-hmm. is a large green space itself. There's also a few little parklets here and there also, but you're correct. I mean, we have very beautiful park facilities, excellent fields for soccer, baseball, football, lacrosse. We are very blessed to put a big investment in our green space. It's very important to us. You know, we look to, you know, where's our next park as we are continuing to grow or trying to acquire land near our parks to expand those particular parks.
Is there still more room for development in Cranberry? It looks like to me, at least, now I don't live there, but it looks like the northern part of the township is about the only area that's still undeveloped.
Yeah, I would say there's still probably, it's probably 70% developed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 30% yet to develop, but we also look at redevelopment. You know, those areas that are ripe for redevelopment that, you know, may have made sense 20 years ago being in those positions, but it's valuable land, very valuable space to be setting up a manufacturing facility or a parking area that we see ultimately being redeveloped also in time.
Has the Cranberry Connector improved the traffic situation a bit, going down 19 and other roads in Cranberry? Seems to me that it has.
Yeah, I mean, we fight that battle, especially on state roads, accordingly, trying to get funding for Freedom Road. We have a tiny little underpass on Rochester Road where the turnpike is that narrows it down, chokes it down to two lanes, barely two lanes, that, you know, someday we hope to expand that. We actually are going to build a underpass on 228.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, going into the Cranberry Springs, the Lemieux Ice Rink Complex. So that'll take a lot of traffic off of 228. And we are also expanding a lane on 228, too, in anticipation of that. We really strive hard to be ahead of that curve, trying to leverage development money, impact fees where we can, in order to recruit additional monies for expansions of our road. It's a big challenge, a very big challenge, but like something that we focus on a regular basis.
Well, I think it's a real feather in the cap to have the Mario Lemieux UPMC Ice Complex there. I mean, that's fantastic. And I don't know, the new Cardinal Worrell High School, is that in Cranberry too?
It is. It's in Cranberry. A little bit of it's in Seven Fields too. Mm-hmm. But it is Cranberry. St. Kilian's Catholic School also is in Cranberry,
I knew
too.
It was very close to the border.
It is on the border. Well, definitely the high school is on the borderline, but most of it is in Cranberry.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Mazzoni with us. And once again, just to recap, if you weren't with us at the beginning of our conversation, it's a big event every year down in Cranberry. They call it Community Days. And it's next week, the latter part of next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That would be July 12th, 13th, and 14th. And as Bruce said, take the whole family. Take the nieces, nephews, and the neighbor kids. It's free admission.
It is free admission. Yeah. Can I throw my website out there for
please
us?
Please do.
It's www.ctcchest.org. And again, all the information on Community Days is on the webpage, too.
Bruce, good to see you again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay. Yeah,
thanks. Still more to come on It's Your Turn today. On the next segment, we're going to be chatting with Simon Newport, and he's going to give us all the information on this Western Pennsylvania Model T Ford convention that's coming to our area, and at one point during the convention later this month, they're going to be bringing a whole bunch of Model Ts into Butler. So we'll find out what that's all about with Simon coming up next. Stick around. More to come on It's Your Turn on WISR Friday edition right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Ah, the 1960s in Butler. Groovy music. The summer of love. They were simpler times. And when Friday nights would come around, the kids stormed the dance floor at Funorama, the Tumble Inn, and the Purple Underground. Relive those groovy nights with the Dream Dance on Saturday, July 14th at Butler's home for entertainment, the Tanglewood Center. Join WISR's Mr. 60s, Bill Reichert, and Dave Martin for a night of swinging tunes. Doors open at 5, buffet dinner by Chef George at 6, and the dancing starts at 7. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are $25 per person. Call 287-0021.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. And I am very interested in getting more information from our next guest about the Western Pennsylvania Model T Ford Club. Simon Newport is with us here. Simon, nice to meet you. Great to have you here on the program today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to discuss some fun things we're bringing here to Western PA.
Well, I found out about, I think it was back March or maybe April when the announcement came that the 62nd annual tour of the Model T Ford Club International was going to be here in Western Pennsylvania, and all of a sudden it's just a few weeks down the road, right?
It's unbelievable. We've been working about a year and a half on this, and I honestly can't believe it either that we're now about a week and a half beforehand, and we're very excited to be bringing all these people from all different types of backgrounds and all over the country to see Little Western Pennsylvania.
So what are the exact dates? It does run for several days, right?
Yes, it's actually a whole week-long event. It starts on the 15th of July and then goes all the way to the 20th
mm-hmm.
Is when the actual event is happening. There will be Model Ts probably all throughout Cranberry area down near the Marriott all the way from Friday until the next Sunday, though. But the actual event is a week long, yes.
So the 15th, so that's not next week, but it's the week after.
Yes, yeah. That is correct.
Yeah.
It starts on a Sunday.
Now, there's going to be one day. My engineer says I need to get you just a little closer to that microphone. That's perfect. One day, I understand, there's going to be a whole bunch of Model Ts coming into Butler.
Yes, there's one day that all the Ts will be coming into Butler, and that is on Friday the 20th
mm-hmm.
in the afternoon. We will be bringing them downtown to not only see the town and enjoy the shops, and we're going to show them all the murals that have been painted in town. The main attraction is the Butler County Ford dealership turning 100 years old, also selling Model Ts. It's not too often that you get to not only visit a original Model T dealership, but also it being still in use to this day. It's definitely a rarity in the world, and we're really excited to showcase that little part of automobile heritage and history in Butler County.
Yeah, that's a fascinating building in addition to being a very successful business for 100 years.
Yes.
But I was talking with some folks down there, I guess it was a year or so ago. Actually, they took me through the whole building. And it was Henry Ford himself who came up with that original concept for a Ford dealership. And there were many, many Ford dealerships around the country that were built exactly like that. And for folks who have never been inside, it's fantastic. There are elevators that take, because it's like four stories tall. And there are cars on every story. I mean, you know, the one's a body shop, and you go up another floor, and there's something else. And they have elevators that take the cars and trucks up, obviously pretty big ones. Fascinating building. And it's one of the very few that are still in existence.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, is that not only is it the building still there, there's a lot of original Ford dealerships that you can see as buildings, but not many still have cars being sold out of them.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, and we're excited to showcase that.
So that'll be on Friday of that week, and that would be Friday the 20th, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Is there a timeline for that? They're going to spend a part of the day here? Or?
The cars will be coming through town, I would imagine, most all of the afternoon. They're going to be having lunch in a park north of Butler, and then they're coming downtown. If anyone wants to come see them there, it is going to be tough because we have allotted all of the parking down there for the 207 cars.
Mm-hmm.
We are telling a lot of folks that if they want to get a really good opportunity to see the cars, to maybe try to come down to Saxonburg on the 15th. Because we're going to have a big car show with all of them staged and parked as a giant lot of Model Ts. But downtown Butler is also a very good place to see them on Friday.
So Sunday the 15th, that's the opening day.
That's the opening day. Yeah, we're having our car show and our judging happening that time.
Now, this is open to the public, right?
People it's open to the public, yes. Anyone can come see it. There is no reservations need to be made. Anytime you see an old car, a lot of these folks are very nice people and they love to talk about them. So.
So, folks, it'll seem like you're in an old-time movie with more than 200 Model T Fords around. Simon Newport is with us. Do you have a Model T yourself, Simon?
Yes, I actually have three of them. I got started at a young age with my father, and he has taught me a great deal throughout the years. And now I think I'm hooked is a good way to put it. It's not an obsession, but I got three of them now at the age of 24. So
I was going to say, you don't look old enough to have three Model Ts, for goodness sake.
I probably am not old enough to have three, but I do, and I enjoy it. And it's just part of the many things I get to enjoy in my life, and it's really a pleasure.
Now, if you acquire one of these, do most of them that you acquire take some renovation work?
Yes. Yeah, I'll use that word lightly. A lot of them take a lot of work to get back on the road. There are some that have been preserved through time from families or caretakers, but a lot of them, you know, are 100 years old and have been in a field or in a barn for a long time. Mm-hmm. The first car that I actually got to build was really never a car. It was all parts that people had donated to me at the age of 15. So I had a whole bunch of parts and built a car out of it. And I can't thank all those people enough for all that, all they did for me at a young age to get me hooked, but also really find a hobby that is enjoyable and exciting, and you get to build something from nothing is really a memory that you can never take away. So
if you're rebuilding a Model T, I mean, can you find parts? I mean, say you needed a hood or a wheel or something like that?
Yeah, one of the reasons why Model Ts are so popular in the old car market in regards to restoration is you can buy almost every part brand new reproduction.
Hmm.
Since Henry Ford built close to 16 million cars, there's still a lot of them on the road, and we're very fortunate that there's still auto suppliers that are remanufacturing parts. Firestone still makes tires for them to this day. The original manufacturer.
Can you get tires?
Yeah, you can buy them from Firestone. They have them on stock, as well as many other companies reman tires for them. You can buy all new sheet metal, all new mechanical parts. It's really a restoration joy, because you get to have all this availability to you that you don't necessarily get with many automobiles from the turn of the century.
I've always heard the phrase, and I don't know whether it's legendary or what, that you can get any color Model T you want as long as it's black. Is that true? Were they only black?
That was a statement that Ford did make, and I will say the majority of them were black. The very first years, the first 4 years or so, they did make them in colors, but Ford decided that black was the cheapest, most efficient, and best way to sell cars, so he did make them all black for roughly about 10 to 12 years of the time he built the cars. And then the last 2 years of the production, to keep up with a few other automobile manufacturers like Chevrolet, Dodge, Chrysler, he did offer them in colors again. So that statement is very true, but it's not necessarily true for all Model Ts. So if you see one in different colors, it might be original.
There are some things, and I did a little bit of research, so I didn't appear quite so stupid when I'm talking to an expert here, Simon, who has three Model Ts. The Model T was produced from 1908 to 1927, which, when you think about today, that's a long span to have one model car produced. The Model T was by no means the first car. There were lots of cars. There were cars that had been around for many years, quite frankly, before that. But it was the first, like, standard, right? I mean, Henry Ford developed a production line for knocking out cars, bada-bing, bada-bing, bada-bing. And that was a great innovation. Plus, it was affordable.
That was the biggest thing. It was affordable to the masses. You are correct. The car was not new. The automobile was not new by any stretch of the word by 1908. But before that, the biggest problem that a individual had was that most cars were almost tailored for you as the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
The car would not necessarily be the same as the next. There would be an innovation or a change in part. And so you would buy a car basically bespoke to you as a person. And that would be tough when the car broke down. But what Henry Ford did was take a concept that he learned overseas of mass production and assembly line, where you could take a part off of one car and it would fit on the next car and on the next, and you could build a car like I did at 15 from 100 different automobiles, and it works. And he used that same tactic all throughout his production of the Model T and all throughout the years to come. And it worked, as you know, and it put the world on wheels, selling cars to the average individual for a very inexpensive price.
Something else that I found out, because I've always wondered about the name Model T, Ford actually had many models before that, including the one that came right before the Model T was, guess what, the Model S. However, when he finally stopped making the Model Ts in 1927, the next one wasn't Model U, which you would expect. He said, I want to start all over again. This is a new concept, So he started all over again with the Model A. So the Model A actually came after the Model T.
That is correct. And it wasn't the first Model A either. He had made a Model A in 1903. So he actually reproduced the same model again, but 30 years later. So I'm not really certain where the A came from. His son, Edsel, had a large influence on the Model A, and I don't know if it was just a restart or, you know, a fresh slate, but yeah, it's very interesting that there were, and as you know, as you saw, there's a lot of different K, R, S, and then T, and then we go to an A. So it doesn't really make any sense, but I don't argue with it, so.
So his son was Edsel?
Yes.
Henry Ford's son, and was that the namesake of the Edsel car back in the late 50s, or was it? Because in the Ford line, you know,
oh yes,
there's a lot of Henrys.
Yes, that is correct. I believe his son was really heavily influenced on the Edsel. I'm not very certain because that car was such a flop for the Ford company. I'm not very read into that car a ton, but I believe that was his namesake, yes.
It was about the only flop that the Ford company's ever had.
Pretty much.
The Edsel was a strange. I never rode in one. All I can remember is that a very strange-looking grill.
Yes, it was just an odd car. It was a car that was not appreciated and a little before its time, actually. It was probably like a lot of cars that flopped.
Yeah. But the Model T, my goodness, who could have guessed? Yeah.
Yep.
So now are you able to take your Model Ts, you know, right out on the open highway? Is that legal?
It is legal for any classic car or antique automobile to go on any highway or any part of the state road systems. They do ask that you shouldn't go out after dark unless it's for a club event. But most times, any time I'm out is a club event because I'm the president of the club. So we tend to always try to use safety precautions where we can. Most all of my cars have turn signals and brake lights and high and low beams. But still, it runs on a 6-volt system. Nothing is terribly bright. But we try to be as safe as possible when out on the roads. A Model T can only go about 40 to 45 miles an hour, so a highway is pushing it for most cars. So we try to stick on the back roads as much as we can, and certainly, we definitely have a lot of them.
Certainly wouldn't want to go on the interstate, that's for sure.
Nope. However, I will say I have before in one that went a little faster than a stock Model T. That was a little scary, but it was fun.
I didn't realize that top speed was about 45 miles an hour, and I never thought about turn signals, for example. I mean,
yep.
That's standard procedure today, but actually I'm sure there are many listeners who can remember when you still had to stick your hand out the driver's side window to indicate when you were going to turn.
Yes, sir. That is a very common thing in some of the cars that don't have any of that. And honestly, it's kind of scary because many people today don't even understand what right, left, and stop means with hand signals.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I believe it's still part of the curriculum for teaching young drivers today, not a lot of people know it.
I had it whenever I got that book to get my driver's license.
So did I.
Although cars all had turn signals at
yep.
that time. I don't know why they put it in there.
Yep.
Anyway, so all of your vehicles are licensed to be on the road. Do you have to get an antique plate, or can you get a regular license plate if you want one?
Model Ts have to have classic or antique license plates. Mm-hmm. To get a license plate in the state of Pennsylvania for a regular car, you have to go through state inspection, which a Model T would never pass because it doesn't have four-wheel brakes and it doesn't have all the safety features and seat belts that you need to pass an inspection for a regular state licensed car. So all Model Ts you'll see will have an antique plate or that state's antique version of a plate when you see them in town here.
Well, tell me a little bit about the local chapter, the Western Pennsylvania Model T Ford Club. You're president of that organization?
Yes, I am. I've been president now for, I think this is my third year. When I was 9 years old, my father bought his first Model T, and I helped him restore it, and I can still remember those memories. But in 2003, he founded this club through the Model T Ford Club International, the big organization. Mm-hmm. And it's been happening around here ever since. So since 2003, I'm now the president of it. We have around 10 families that are involved in the club. I'm trying to count all the cars in my head. At least over 20 cars, 25 cars are involved. And we have a lot of fun.
Now, if you're expecting more than 200 Model Ts coming up in another week or so, obviously you're getting them from all over the tri-state region, probably even further away than that, some of them, I would guess.
Yes, we have cars coming from literally every almost every state in the continental U.S. We have cars coming from Washington, California, Texas, Florida, up through the New England states. So we will have a vast array of different people and backgrounds, as well as we're having a couple from Australia coming as well.
Really?
Yes.
Well, the shipping cost on that must be pretty high.
A lot of people actually, since Model Ts went all over the world, a lot of people come to these events in the United States and they drive other people's cars.
Oh, okay.
And vice versa. So like my friends right now are in Sweden on a Model T tour and are driving some Swedish Model Ts. So it's a worldwide event, and through it I've made a lot of very nice friends that I know that I could say hello to in various different countries with Model Ts. So
have you ever driven a Model T in another country?
I have not yet. Well, no, in Canada I have. So I guess in technically, but that one's pretty darn close. It's on my list, though.
I wonder if in England they had a Model T with the steering wheel on the opposite side.
They did. That is correct.
Really?
Yep. And the European and especially England and Australian models, yep, they were all right-hand steering.
Hmm. If you had a 1908 Model T, that would have been the first year they were out, and then a 1927 Model T, the last year they were produced, would they be virtually the same? I mean, today you might have a model in a car line, pick a line, whatever you want,
yeah.
Where even though the model name would stay the same, the car could be vastly different every few years when they kind of restyled it. Did they ever do that with the Model T?
The Model T stayed mechanically the same. There were obviously innovations to make the car cheaper and more efficient throughout the years, but you could theoretically, and no one's really done this, but you could take a 1908 chassis with the motor and driveline and frame, and you could put a 1927 body on that car.
Mm.
That's how similar and the same they stayed throughout the years. Now, Ford did change the body styles and the amount of brass and fancy things on the cars to make them essentially as cheap as humanly possible to sell to both, you know, people and businesses and different things like that. But the cars fundamentally stayed the same, and that's what really changed automobiles, because you could take a part from a 1927 and fit it on a 1908, and you could keep the car running. And that was the beauty of the car, that it would, that the parts were all interchangeable, all on a basically on a standard set of measurements and guidelines. And it really made the car fundamentally different than anything that had came before it.
And you didn't need metric wrenches either.
No, you can't. You didn't. You can take a Model T apart with your standard Craftsman set, pretty much. SAE.
Were there convertible models of the Model T?
That was actually the most popular car, because it reminded people that had horse and buggies of a horse and buggy.
Mm-hmm.
The Roadster was very popular, as well as the touring car, which was the four-seater open car. And that was pretty much the only cars that sold for the first 6 or 7 years of the production. And then in 1915, he really came out with his sedans, which he marketed to actually women, because with a sedan you had a hard top with roll-up windows and you could stay out of the elements. And like we have a sedan in 1925, and we have the original brochure that has you know, family and showing a woman driving the car, you know, something that was definitely not normal for back then. It was interesting that Ford was marketing this to such a, you know, to a new style of individual.
We may have a question from a listener here. Let me get on the horn here. Hello, caller. You have a question or a comment for our guest, Simon?
Actually, no, but thank you.
Oh, okay. She must have been misinformed. Didn't realize what we were talking about here. We're talking about the Model T International Annual Tour coming to Butler County, showcased throughout our region, not next week, but the week after that. And it all kicks off with a car show at Roebling Park in Saxonburg, Sunday, July 15th, which will be a week from this Sunday. What time is that, Simon?
It should start at right around 12 o'clock, and we'll go until, we're thinking roughly 5 o'clock, but until everyone's done with the opening banquet and the opening ceremony and all the cars will be judged.
Is there any admission charge to come down to Sax American Museum?
Nope. Every event or any place you see Model Ts is all free for you to go patronize the cars and look at them and enjoy them. A lot of the people will be enjoying different sites and things throughout their time here that may be a part of a paid tour that they're paying for. Mm-hmm. But you're most certainly welcome to come look at the cars, talk to the people. I know that I and many, many people enjoy just talking about the history of the car and mm-hmm. letting people know about why this is important and why we enjoy it so much.
Will there be other stops throughout the week then before you come to Butler on Friday the 20th?
Yes, that day we are going up to Moraine State Park, and we're going all throughout the northern Butler region on about an 85-mile trip throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Is that a long haul for a Model T, 85-mile?
That's not too bad. We're going to put about 450 miles on the cars throughout the entirety of the week, actually. And there's people that drive Model Ts all over the place. Actually, next summer, I'm building a car, one of the three that I own, to go from New York to Seattle, Washington on a 27-day race.
Wow.
So 4,700 miles in a Model T.
I just saw the Great Race movie on TV a yep. couple of days ago. You'll be involved in something like that.
Yes, huh? I will be. It's going to be very exciting. And there's only 50 cars that have been picked. I actually put my name in the hat when I was 17 years old to do the run for 2019. So, and I got picked a couple years ago, so I'm now building a car to do the run. And the only reason why I can do this is because I'm a school teacher. So I get some time to my hands in the summer to be able to do a run like this. And it's going to be very exciting, and I'm one of only 50 from around the world. We're having people from England, Ireland, Australia, Europe that are a part of this event as well. So it's going to be even more of a haul than 85 miles. So,
a few more minutes to chat with Simon. I want to take a quick break here. One of our sponsors, Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, headquarters for footwear for the summer, including SAS Comfort Shoes Sandals. They have a wide variety of them. If you've tried SAS Comfort Shoes, you know how comfortable they are. They feel like bedroom slippers. Well, the sandals are just as comfortable. You know, some sandals are, it's like walking on wood, you know. They really hurt your feet. SAS Comfort Shoes Sandals, comfortable. And in a variety of different styles and colors, too. Try a pair on. They've got them at Miller's Shoes, your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes, downtown Butler. Also, all the athletic shoes you'd ever want to see for summertime wear for everybody in the family. They've got all the big-name brands, Nike and New Balance and Saucony and Rockport and Keds and Skechers and Easy Spirit and Asics and Pro-Pet, and on they go. Miller's Shoes. Always a nice variety of men's and women's shoes, sale-priced on racks, too, for easy browsing. Miller's Shoes, a tradition for more than 125 years in downtown Butler. You'll get great selection, you'll get that great price, and a friendly Cyprian smile, too. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown. Quick check of midday lottery numbers. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation with Simon right after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 36, 36. The pick three, 677, 677. The pick four, 7721. The pick five, 83853. The wild ball is zero for each of those. The treasure hunt, 4, 14, 25, 26, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Losing a loved one is unbearable. It makes us feel so alone, so helpless. We ask ourselves, does anybody really understand how we feel? Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's been structured to help ease your emotional pain. There are group sessions with people who truly understand how you feel because they feel the same way. And being together helps. Men and women are invited to attend. For over 20 years, we've helped hundreds and hundreds of people cope with these intense feelings. We offer five programs, a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. They're conducted by our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back. Wrapping up our conversation with Simon Newbert. Do you have any idea what back in the day, 1915 or whenever, what the price of a new Model T was?
I believe in 1915, the cars were selling for right around $500 or maybe a little less than that. The epitome of the cheap Model T was in the mid to late 1920s when you could buy a Roadster bone stock for about $290.
Wow.
Which, you know, a home back then was about $1,200, a little more than that. So you could really, really afford a car. I mean, even 10 years before that, you were spending $2,000 or $3,000 for a car. And just as a reference to show you how cheap he made a car. I mean, no one at that time ever matched his cheap price on a car.
I've heard, in fact, earlier this week, because I had announced that you were going to be here, and we were going to talk about this on Friday, and one of my other guests was here, and after the program, he said, "Have you ever been to Dearborn, Michigan, to the Henry Ford Museum?" And I said, "No, I haven't." And then he said it was a wonderful place to visit. You're nodding your head. It looks like you've been there.
Yes, it is an excellent place to go, not only for automobile history, but for history in general. It is